All right. Good morning. You know, you people really are something. That's a good thing. The passage we just read reminds us that we really are something, right? We are the people of God. And you know, the Sermon on the Mount is something that really reflects us. And I didn't really realize that until somebody pointed that out to me a couple of years ago. Some of the things that the Sermon on the Mount teaches us and reminds us of. And so I'm going to be spending the next several weeks going over the Sermon on the Mount. But before we get into that, I want to ask a couple of questions regarding the Sermon on the Mount. Does Jesus really intend for us to live by the words of the Sermon on the Mount? I mean, think about it. Does He really intend for us to do the things and to put into practice the things that are on the Sermon on the Mount? Or is it just some high, lofty ideal, something that's way up there that we'll never really attain to? Is it just there to show us how incapable we are? Or does He really intend for this to be a model for our life? Consider some of the things that Jesus says throughout the Sermon on the Mount. He tells us not to get angry with our brother. Not just don't kill them. Okay, we shouldn't do that. But He says don't even get angry with them. Tells us don't just not commit adultery, but don't even lust. If your hand causes you to sin or your eye causes you to sin, get rid of it. Instead of just giving your wife a certificate of divorce, don't divorce at all. Or don't make vows, don't swear to God, just let your yes be yes and your no be no. Love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you. Oh, when you do good things, when you do righteous things, make sure you do them in secret. Don't do them to be seen of men. Avoid the praise of men, because if you begin to live for the praise of men, then that's all you're going to get. Treasure God, not the things of this world. Don't worry. Don't be anxious about the things of this world. And don't judge your brother's speck in his eye. Deal with the plank in your eye first. Oh, the golden rule. However you want people to treat you is the way you should treat them. Bear good fruit. People are known by their fruit. And on and on and on. Are these things that He really expects us to live by? Or are they just instructions to set the bar really high so that we'll reach it, though He never knows that we'll never be able to reach it? Is this a model for life? You know, I remember growing up, we used to memorize verses from the Sermon on the Mount. And a couple of years ago, William actually went over to Israel and it was at the place where the Sermon on the Mount was actually given. And he said that all of the students that were there in the particular group had to memorize the Sermon on the Mount. And when they actually got there, they would take turns and get called on to recite different parts of the Sermon on the Mount. Because the idea was that if you memorized the Sermon on the Mount, then it would become a part of your life. But does Jesus really intend for us to live by these instructions? Consider some of the instructions. If your enemy slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other cheek also. What do we typically do with that? What's usually our first reaction? Well, He doesn't expect for us to be a doormat. That's usually the first thing, at least that's the first thing that used to come out of my mouth. And then we talk about all the different ways that maybe God doesn't really expect us to turn the cheek in certain situations. And sometimes our expositions border on almost dismissing what Jesus says. We talk about what it doesn't mean, but what does it mean? Or what about when He says, do not judge lest you be judged? What do we typically do with that? I know what I have typically done in the past. We start talking about, well, you know, the Bible does say to use righteous judgment. And we talk about all the ways that we are to judge. So if it doesn't mean that, then what does it mean? And sometimes the exposition can border on almost dismissing what Jesus says. Or what about pray for your enemies and pray for those who persecute you? Don't retaliate. Is this an impossible ethic for us to live by? Does Jesus really intend for us to put into practice the things that are in the Sermon on the Mount? And I would say an emphatic yes, especially if we understand what the Sermon on the Mount means. And so this morning, before we get into looking at all of these instructions in depth, I want to just offer some observations about the Sermon on the Mount. Number one, The Sermon on the Mount is not about doing good works. Now that may seem kind of strange, a strange thing to say. Really? It's not about just doing good works. Go to chapter 7 of Matthew, if you would, with me. And I want you to notice what Jesus says. This is toward the end after He's given all of these instructions. And notice what He says in verse 21. He says, "Not everyone who says to Me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven. But he who does what? The will of My Father who is in heaven. Many will say to Me on that day, 'Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in Your name? And in Your name cast out demons? And in Your name perform many miracles?' Then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from Me, you who practice lawlessness.'" So what was the problem here? The problem wasn't that they weren't doing good things. Now these are not bad things that they were doing, right? The problem wasn't that they weren't doing good things. And there are people all over the world that do good things. It's good to help those who are in need, right? It's good to go visit those who need to be visited. It's good to donate to a good cause. There's people all over the world who do all different kinds of good things. And in this passage, these folks were doing things that you probably could classify as good as well. But that wasn't the problem. The problem was that they weren't doing the will of God. Because you see, doing good works and doing God's will are not necessarily always the same thing, are they? So the problem was not that they weren't doing good things. The problem was that they weren't doing God's will. Now I know when I used to read this passage, my first thing would be to start talking about how all those people that I know out there are not doing God's will. They're saying, "Lord, Lord," and won't enter into the kingdom of heaven. And I applied it to everyone else, and Jesus says, don't do that. Deal with the plank in your own eye first, before you try to help the brother with the speck in his own eye. You know, this is probably one of the most chilling parts of the Sermon on the Mount. A lot of people think, a lot of us can think, that because we're doing good things, we've lived a good life, that we're okay with God. And we have a cause to be proud of all the good things that we've done in our life. And you know, that was me once upon a time. I was smug in my religion. Oh, I wasn't a bad person. I don't think anyone would have called me a bad person. I did do good works in the name of Christ. I can remember helping out with VBS, and I can remember teaching people, getting involved in Bible studies, and I remember even helping out with visitation, even participating in taking meals to people who need them. But you know, the Sermon on the Mount showed me that there were still some things that were missing in my life. I was actually fairly judgmental at one time in my life. Judgmental of other people, especially if they had it wrong. And I used to get into these long, drawn-out arguments with people, and I just seemed to relish that because I knew I was right. I could remember getting, and I was just a teenager, probably 13, 14 years old, and I used to get into these religious arguments with my uncles who were older than my dad. And it was so bad that I remember one time we were on our way home, and Dad said, "John, you really need to tone it down." And but I knew that I was right. I was smug in the fact that I was right, and I knew that those people were wrong, and they would probably lost. And boy, isn't this sick? I got some sort of smug satisfaction from that, and that's not the attitude of Christ at all, is it? And so this was missing in my life, and this is a very important thing that was missing in my life. I didn't love them the way that Jesus said to. I didn't pray for them in this way that Jesus said to pray for them. Oh, I was doing good works, but I necessarily wasn't always doing the will of God. "Lord, Lord, did I not help teach VBS? Didn't I take those meals to those people who were in need? Didn't I have the Bible study with them? Didn't I do visitation?" And you see why this is one of the most chilling parts of the Sermon on the Mount? If we're tempted to apply it to everyone else, we may forget to apply it to ourselves. Many will think they might make it, but Jesus said, "I never knew you." And so I don't want to be too quick to inspect someone else's speck if I've got a plank that's hanging out of my own eye that I need to deal with. And so the Sermon on the Mount is not just about doing good works. What it is about, number two, is about the doing of God's will. And emphasize that word doing. See, there's knowing and memorizing and knowing what it says and knowing some facts, but it's about putting it into practice. Look at the last thing Jesus says in His conclusion on the Sermon on the Mount. Verse 24 of chapter 7. Here's what He says. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine, okay, we need to listen to them, we need to take them into account, and does what? Acts on them. Who hears them and acts on them may be compared to a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain fell, the floods came, and the winds blew and slammed against that house. And yet it did not fall, for it had been founded on the rock. Everyone who hears these words of mine and does not act on them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. The rain fell, the floods came, and the winds blew and slammed against that house, and it fell, and great was its fall. It's not just about listening and knowing and understanding and knowing correctly what it says, but putting it into practice. It's about hearing and acting on His words. And if all I do is hear it, and if all I do is nod in agreement, if all I do is apply it to everyone else, but I don't put it into practice in my own life, then Jesus says it's like that foolish man who built his house on the sand. The storm will come and it will fall. And the storm comes in many different forms. Sometimes the storm comes in the form of persecution. Because you're a Christian, you may be tempted to think that you really are a loser, that somehow you're doing something wrong. You may be tempted to distancing yourself from Jesus and all of His people. Maybe the storm may come in the desire to get even when somebody has wronged you, and you're tempted to get back at them. They got one over on you, and you want to get one over on them, and if something bad happens to them, you rejoice inside. But Jesus said, don't do that. Love them and pray for them. You might be tempted to judge someone, maybe because they're not like you. Maybe they don't look like you. And so you're tempted to judge them. But Jesus says, don't do that. Whatever standard you place on them, Jesus said, that standard is going to be used against you. And I don't want to be judged by my standard. I don't want to be judged by any man's standard. I want the mercy of God instead. So Jesus said, don't do that. Or maybe the storm may come when somebody notices that you do good things. You do good works. Maybe you're exemplary in your good works. And they notice that and they begin to compliment you and praise you. And you begin to feel pretty good about yourself. And you begin to live for that praise. And you look forward to that. And that becomes your motivation. And Jesus says, don't do that either. Because if that's what you live for, if that is your motivation, then that's all you're going to get. It's not just about knowing the words to the Sermon on the Mount, but it's about putting them into action. You know, we went to a baseball game a couple of days ago and watched these guys pitching and hitting that ball around the field. And it's amazing when you consider there's a 90-mile-an-hour pitch coming at you, that split second that you have to respond, that anyone's able to hit anything at all. How do you become an expert at playing ball? You read a book about all the rules of baseball and the way you're supposed to swing the bat and the way you're supposed to throw the ball. You read a book and you can know all the ins and outs about baseball, but is that what makes you an expert at baseball? What do you have to do? You've got to practice. There's a lot of practice. You've got to put it into action. Or it's like learning to drive. When you go to driver's ed, you sit in a classroom and you learn all the rules of the road, right? And you take that written test and you pass it and you're feeling pretty good about yourself. And then you got to get behind the wheel, right? And that's something altogether different. And you watch your instructor's knuckles get white as they try. It's a good thing they've got that little brake over on their side to stop it. I remember when I was learning to drive, like, what are you doing? He said, watch it. It takes practice. It takes putting it into action. Or what about studying martial arts? There are all kinds of books about taekwondo and karate and judo and all of these other martial arts in the library. And you could study it, and you could memorize it, and you could be an expert on all the information in that book. But you don't become an expert until you begin to practice and put it into action. I heard someone once suggest that the Sermon on the Mount is the Jesus dojo. Okay, this is where we learn to do the Christian life by putting it into action. This is what we learn, and this is where we grow in our knowledge of God by putting what He instructs us into action. So here's some good exercises for the Jesus dojo. Real simple. Read the Sermon on the Mount regularly. You've got to know the information and what to put into action, but read it regularly. That's Matthew chapter 5 through verse 7. And then take note of all the things that Jesus says to do and all the things that Jesus says not to do. Write them down. Pray about them. Meditate on them. Reflect on your interaction with them throughout the day when you come down to the end of the day. And do this every day and conform your thoughts and your actions to what Jesus instructs us to do. Because it's not just about knowing the right thing, but it's about putting it into action. The third observation, and I didn't realize this until probably a couple of years ago, and I don't know why I never noticed it before, but the third thing is simply this. Jesus expects great things from us. Have you ever thought about that? Jesus expects great things from us. Where did we ever get the idea that Jesus expects very little from us? Look at some of the things that Jesus says to us on the Sermon on the Mount. Go to chapter 5 of Matthew. And you notice He starts here with these Beatitudes. In the very first one, in verse 3, He says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the what? Kingdom of heaven. You are heirs of the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of God." Notice what He says in verse 5. "Blessed are the gentle, for they shall what? Inherit the earth." Or verse 8. "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall what? They shall see God." Or verse 9. "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called what? Sons of God." All of you are children of God. These are lofty realities. These aren't trifling things. Jesus says some lofty things about who we are. We will see God. We're children of God. We're heirs of the kingdom. We'll inherit the earth. And then go down to verse 13. He says, "You are what? You're the salt of the earth." Now, have you ever known anyone to be called the salt of the earth? Sometimes people, you'll hear someone say, "Well, that person is the salt of the earth." And that's high praise, right? Those are high-sounding words. And when we start reflecting on what in the world does that mean, we realize that salt has hundreds of uses all over the world, right? And we could reflect on each one of them, but we see the effects of salt everywhere. It's used everywhere in the world. It's valuable. It's precious. And so that means you, the salt of the earth, your effect is seen everywhere in your life, in your community, among your family and friends, and all over the world. That's the effect that we, the church, have on the world. In verse 14, He says, "You are what? The light of the world." And it's the same thing. You can see the effect of the light of the world all over the world, can't you? All you have to do is look outside and step outside and you feel the sunshine on your skin. You see the trees growing, the corn's growing up in the field and the beans and the gardens are growing. The flowers are blooming out here and it's warm out, sometimes very warm. But we see the effect that the world is teeming with all kinds of life, and we see the effect of light everywhere. And we are the light of the world and our effect is seen everywhere. You know, this reminds us that Jesus has high expectations for us. You know, it's been said that nothing can be more discouraging to a person than to tell them that you have low expectations or no expectations of them. What happens when you tell a child, "I don't expect very much out of you"? I mean, is that a freeing thing? Is that something that's going to bring them joy? Oh, if there's no expectations, then I'm never going to fail. Oh, life is great. It all actually has the opposite effect, doesn't it? It is very discouraging. But how motivating is it in a positive way when you say you are going to do great things in your life? God has great plans for you. And that's what Jesus is reminding us with these words. He has great plans for us. He expects the church to change the world, and the church has changed the world. Do you realize that our world would be a much different place were it not for us, the church? I shudder when I think about what kind of world we would live in had Jesus never come to this earth and had He never established His people, the church. Why do you think authorities all over the world and all throughout history have persecuted Christians? Especially when you consider the fact that in many cases Christians are, they're just average people. In some places they're just marginalized or nobodies. Why would you even care about them? It's because you can see the effects of salt and light all over the world. Jesus has great plans for us. Our effect can be seen everywhere. So don't ever say, oh, that's too big. Don't ever think Jesus didn't expect much from us. We're changing the world. Part of our purpose in this world is to keep the faith and also to share the faith. Part of our purpose is to connect with people. Part of our purpose is to minister and serve in the name of Christ, and ultimately to be able to share the gospel. Because God's heart's desire is for all people to hear the good news and to have the opportunity to come to Him and be reconciled to Him. That's why Jesus made that huge step from heaven to earth. I can't even imagine what that must have been like to come from heaven to earth and to actually literally walk in our shoes and to die on the cross and bear the weight of the sins of the entire world. Something that He didn't deserve, but something that He was willing to do because He values us. Because He loves us. We are human beings created in the image of God. Therefore, God values us. We have inherent dignity and worth and value. And His heart's desire is that we would accept Jesus as our Lord and as our Savior, and that we would let Him wash away all of our sins, and when we come out of that water, begin to walk with Him. And if you've already done that, if you've already been baptized, if you're already following Christ, then remember, you are the light of the world. You are the salt of the earth. And God has great plans for you. Your effect can be seen everywhere. The people in your life, the people that you go to school with, the people that you work with, your neighbors, your family, your friends, your effect can be seen everywhere. Don't ever doubt the power of God. You know, one of my teachers when I was still in school at Harding used to say that, you know, you may be one man, but with God it doesn't matter, because one man and God always make a majority, right? And so let's never forget that. We're going to go ahead and sing the invitation song this morning. And if you need to respond to the Lord's invitation, we invite you to the front as we stand and sing.